secret for one another. It's an agreed upon location. It also is a place where you can drop supplies behind enemy lines, to resupply your forces.
5 seconds.
It's also a place where you can drop documents. So we're looking forward to working also with whistleblowers.
Jeremy Scahill, co-founder of the new investigative journalism organization Drop Site News. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Latino New Yorkers were 8 times more likely to be arrested for cannabis than white New Yorkers over the past 30 years. Black New Yorkers, 15 times more likely. White, black, or brown, data shows we all use cannabis at the same rate. Now New York has changed course and legalized cannabis for adults 21 and over. We are building an equitable industry that invests in communities. Learn more and visit cannabis.ny.gov.
And you are listening, let's move the fan a little closer, please. Thank you. You're listening to WUSB in hell. No, I'm sorry, it's very hot in here. What was I supposed to think? Let's try it again. You're listening to WUSB in Stony Brook, adjacent to hell, where it's 90.1 FM on the FM dial, 107.3 FM, also on the FM dial a little further down, and on the interwebs or whatnot at WUSB.FM.
Just call it the network,
absolutely. And it's, if I'm here, it must be Tuesday and probably 6 o'clock and time for another edition of Off the Wall. Why not? Please, give me a drink. Thank you. Before you know it, just sit down there. Okay. Sorry, folks. We were spending as much time as possible in the air-conditioned part of the studio, which for some reason is the reception room only and not the place where you actually do radio. But we got a fan going, so you might hear what sounds like the ocean in the background. That's just to keep us alive for a little while longer. It's a heat wave. We're in the middle of a heat wave. The show is off the wall. Emmanuel Goldstein over here. Kyle over there.
Yes. Here, there, and everywhere.
You know, I want to say, did you ever see heat like this? But of course we've seen heat like this. This really isn't that bad. And compared to other parts of the country, it's nothing.
No, it's not that bad. It's just that the trend, I think the way it's sort of casual-like. Just yeah. Casually like a unheard of lengthy period of unbearable heat and humidity as well. Uh-huh. Don't forget about that.
No, we're on fire, but you know what? We can get through it. We can get through it together. It's what, how many months in a row where it's been the hottest on record of that month? It's more than a year. It's like 2 years or something. And there are still people out there who are thinking that climate change isn't real. And one of them just died, in fact. not from climate change. But he was a senator? Was he a senator or a representative from Oklahoma?
Oklahoma, yeah.
And he retired last year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the message is in that, but we're all mortal. But maybe that's the message. And we're more mortal the hotter it gets. So that's just something to consider.
Some people are good with it, and we're all fine with this. We're okay. Okay. Yeah. I mean, we'll move on to the next issue, I guess. But yeah, those people speaking on behalf of other people in positions of power, their influence sets up the future.
Why?
That's what it's sort of all about. I don't know. Maybe that's. I don't. You know.
Uh-huh.
I'm not trying to make friends and
be
charismatic here. About
we have
the
enough
whole thing.
Friends. We're full. We're full of friends.
Yeah.
Why am I drinking hot coffee? It's refreshing. I like it. You make the coffee and it's really good, and it's super hot and it's a hot day and I'm hot inside. I'm talking about how hot it is.
It's called entropy.
Okay. All right.
It's heat therapy, right?
My friends, is a sound of satisfaction.
Hot to
cold.
Oh,
man, there's a fly in here now on top of everything else.
They like our climate control.
You've been catching all kinds of insects lately. You want to give a rundown to some of the...
Well, there's these tiny moths I've been catching in the midair.
The tiny moths are the worst. Yeah. They get in your eyes for some reason. You invited, and I say invited because you turned on an outdoor light that's really bright and can be seen for miles, and every moth in the neighborhood came over to it, including this moth that was bigger than a bird.
I think it's a Luna moth.
It was scary.
Yeah.
I mean, it had hair growing out of it. It was, oh my God.
Sizable.
Yeah. but, you know, I'm not sure why you turned the light on, but if you're trying to study the various varieties of moths that we have in the area, success, because you definitely got a variety there.
Well, if you are going in and out of the doorways and entrances, sometimes you can misdirect them. That's what I was trying to do. I think I left it on a little longer than I anticipated.
So, okay, you've caught tiny moths. What else? Not as many stink bugs this year. Haven't seen that many of them.
No, not that many of those. There was a period of giant ants.
Wait, the big black ants.
There was a couple of those this year.
There are the big black ants. They don't want to be inside. They come off the trees and they just sort of wander inside and they're like, "What am I doing here? Please let me out again. I want to be back in the tree." But then there are the little tiny ants, and they do want to be here because they're very comfortable living in the walls. And you definitely.
I don't know.
Wanna...
I don't want to get into this. This is a little personal, you know. Uh-huh. And some of these things, I'm not gonna lie. I saw a couple carpet beetles, and that kind of wigged me out. I was gross.
I'm not sure why carpet beetles are a big deal.
Well, it has to do with vacuuming. So I went through and cleaned a little bit in the studio here because I had seen them and. They're kind of like a beetle, but they're really tiny. You got to watch out for those too.
Okay. That's what do they do?
They thrive on what you shed, basically.
Okay. Well, it sounds like they might be helpful.
They
hang out
in the carpets.
If I'm shedding all over the place and there's somebody around to clean that up.
There's still bugs, you know.
Okay,
but it's a
bugs.
Good reminder. You got to keep cleaning and, you know, perpetually. And as humanely as possible, just escort them out or... use tools.
Something that I don't like that I've seen a couple of times are millipedes. Now
there were a couple of those too.
I once had an infestation of millipedes, I don't know how they got into the house, but they were just appearing everywhere, and I actually had to call somebody to deal with it. That's how bad it got. And he basically went outside for about a half hour, came back with a very satisfied look on his face and saying he won't be bothered by them again. And I haven't been up until now. And a couple have been wandering around in a different part of the house. And I don't want them. I don't want them around. They don't belong here. I did find dead ones, which is a good sign because that means they're not getting what they need. So maybe they'll tell the others and they'll stay out.
Yeah. It just seemed like a period where they really kicked up as far as insects, flying insects, moths, all of that. They have their seasons and routines. Yeah. I saw a couple smaller mosquitoes and things like that.
I haven't seen a mosquito this year. Wow.
There's some very large ones. I think more if you're near any kinds of ponds or places where they would hang out. They're definitely out there.
Uh-huh.
But they're big enough that you really know they're, you know, coming in and checking you out. So
yeah,
mostly tiny ones like. Just around
there are I think these are they're called silverfish. They just move in a really weird way. I saw some of those outside I remember when I grew up in Queens, they were inside. I just remember my mother telling me, those are silverfish. And I'm like, okay, keep them away from me. But there's a whole variety of other bugs that you'll find.
And the birds, they take care of them. Turkeys, too. There's been some really interesting turkey behavior.
Oh, my God.
Just in the last week. Can we even sum it up? I mean, what's the chronology here?
Okay. There have been a number of turkey incidents.
And they do good work on the bugs.
They do. They absolutely do. Beneficial. If you watch a wild turkey going around, they're constantly pecking at the ground.
They're not just doing that
for fun. They're eating insects and ticks and things like that. Oh, by the way, tick, arachnid. I always say anachronism, and that's not right. I got bitten by a tick last year, and I got alpha-gal syndrome as a result, which means I can't eat red meat, which I think is the best disease you could possibly get because it makes you eat healthier. But you know, since last October, I've been avoiding red meat of all sorts. Recently, I looked at my blood work, and my doctor confirmed it's gone down enough where it's safe for me to try a little bit. And I have tried a little bit, not a lot, and check it out again in a few months, and maybe it'll be back to normal. But, you know, I'm kind of converted now. I kind of I'm staying away from, pork and beef and that kind of thing. There's all sorts of so much good food out there.
Yeah, and it's ancient history now, the mm-hmm. incident. But don't be careless when you're going out on trails, if you're going to do some outdoor activity. Not that you could right now. It's impossible. It's so hot.
I do not hang out with ticks anymore, no matter how fun it seems. You know, it's tempting. It's tempting to hang out with a whole bunch of ticks. But you know what? You guys do you. I'll do me.
You don't have to pick up when they call.
No, you don't. Absolutely not.
Then tuck in your pants, you know, like, you know, the sock thing. And then, like, you got the sprays. There's lots of things, but those are bad ones. You don't want any more.
No, absolutely not. And they're tiny. You can't even see them. What are slugs? Turkeys. Are slugs? No, we'll get to turkeys in a second. We're at slugs now.
Okay, slugs.
Are they insects? What are they? They're like snails.
They're stomachs.
They're big stomachs that, yeah, this happens at night. They just come out, even if it's not raining, and they'll leave a trail of slime behind them. And that's how they find their way home, too.
Aren't they cephalopod?
I don't know what they are. But we saw one the other night. And there was something bizarre about this slug. First of all, we were outside, and you know, most people get grossed out by this. Outside, you know, at an outdoor dining establishment, and it was nighttime, and we noticed actually you got bitten. You got bitten by a slug.
I got a nibble.
Nibble. I didn't even know they had teeth.
Well, it just kind of, maybe it was an antenna poke, but it was kind of sharp. It was like, it felt like a sting, or like it was more than just a tickle, you know?
It was like a prodding. Like, what's this? Get out of the way.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that came from the slug and not you. The slug is the one establishing dominance. So you look down.
Well, and I instinctively sort of started brushing my arm. Like, I lifted my arm up to see it, you know, to that reaction you get.
And to your credit, most people would just jump up screaming and like run through a plate glass window or something, or demand to see the manager or whatever. But we were all kind of fascinated by this. And the slug was so bizarre because it started standing up, like it was waving in the air. And I don't know if it realized it was on top of a chair. First of all, I don't know why it went up there, but it took forever to figure out how to get back down again. There was nothing for the slug up there, but maybe he was just a curious slug. I don't know.
I think it's a sort of sensing or smelling equivalent, just sort of. And I think the things that we were doing were of interest, let's just say, fermented and other sorts of libations were on order. And I think they can sense that from quite a ways away, or it definitely activated their senses.
Well, didn't you invite a bunch of slugs to have some beer a couple of years ago? And I think...
We don't talk about that.
Well, I think they got mad at you.
No, that's...
Because
that's...
apparently beer is like chocolate to dogs. It's poison, and you shouldn't do it.
If you want to see them come and hang out, I mean, it isn't, ultimately it's lethal to them.
Mm-hmm.
This is a gardening thing and other, but there are so many of them out there.
True.
And if you really want to see, put a small dish just at ground level and they get attracted to it. So if you have a ton of them showing up, like evidence on say some edible vegetables you're growing, they'll be attracted to this. And if you come out later on, like at night, when they're checking things out, I saw like 20 or 30. It felt like that. I don't know. Maybe it was like, it was maybe two dozen, but
it was a kegger for snout all around the party.
Yeah, exactly. Some of them were like going in and checking it out or on their way out, and others were climbing all the way, all around the walls of the place. And it was a very interesting experiment. I did not realize just how magnetic that beverage was,
except for Bud Light. They don't like Bud Light. They boycott that for some reason.
Okay, that's not true.
I'm not getting into it. And I don't know what their political ideology is, but I think it's kind of
nope.
Yeah,
not all slugs. Mm-mm.
Fine, I know there are exceptions. I know there are exceptions.
That is a gross exaggeration. They like Coors.
Report what I see. All right. Well, okay. So, a turkey incident number one.
Yeah, we got to go through this.
Yeah. So,
I survived the slug nibble, and I, respect to that.
Uh huh.
You got to respect the creatures.
Absolutely. So, really? Right on the air? You're gonna mock me like that? Okay. You have a beverage, and I have hot coffee. Okay. That's just great. Thank you. Thank you so much. Fine. So the first, we were driving down a local road, and I saw a single turkey just standing in the middle of the road. And it had a chick with it, a turkey chick. But this it wasn't a tiny one like the ones we saw a few weeks ago. This one was maybe about a quarter the size of the regular turkey, maybe a little less. And they were both just standing there. I'm not sure if the big turkey was protecting the little one or if the little one was just asking questions of the big one, but they were not moving. They were just there in the middle of the road. There were other turkeys on the grass, but they were steadfast and just checking out this particular area, which had nothing for them. It's asphalt, after all. And, of course, all cars had to come to a stop. And I think that's really good, what I've seen so far around here, is that people really respect the turkeys. They stop. They you know, exchange smiles and stuff like that, because it really is kind of a unique thing when they...
And help alert other drivers.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. I put my flashers on, which actually backfired this time, because I put my flashers on, and I think somebody thought I was broken down, so they went around me, but then they saw the turkeys, and they stopped, too. After a while, they moved.
It was so slow, though, when they did start meandering or finishing their meander across the street. It was almost like a lesson in getting drivers' attention. But you can't, I mean, you can only interpret it. It could also have been just that the heat has them working in slow motion. But adult birds like that do tend to go somewhat slowly to mm-hmm. get the attention of drivers. And they're not as, like, I want to say zippy, but, like, they don't make quick moves like squirrels or other kinds of animals that are on the sides of the road sometimes.
And sometimes flat in the middle of it, too. Well, especially squirrels, because they keep stopping and going back, and, they don't think it through.
They misjudge it, and they don't make eye contact, and they're just real shifty about that. And it is the sort of subtext that, mm-hmm. They do play an important part in the ecosystem here, including in maintaining insects. So this behavior was really interesting because it was so slow and just forced everyone's attention.
Right. I mean, geese do the same thing, but there's something about turkey. Geese don't really chase you like turkeys do. Turkeys will get indignant and take on, they will even chase cars, or they will try to chase a car. Interesting mentality. Anyway, the second incident actually took place on Route 347. Now, if you're familiar with the area, 347 is a divided highway. Right. It's got two, sometimes three lanes in each direction, guardrail in the middle, the whole works. And we were driving down there the other day, and we saw a mother turkey with a whole bunch of little tiny chicks, maybe about eight of them, following her right on the side of the road and on the outer part of a guardrail, not on the inner part. So she wasn't even being safe about it. She was basically leading her chicks on the outer perimeter of the grass, and cars were hurtling down there at highway speed, and it's interesting because they all pretty much were staying straight on the path. They weren't deviating into the road, and I'm wondering if is this some kind of a lesson that she's teaching them, where they come to respect what a highway is and why they shouldn't venture into the highway just by taking them right next to it. I remember the first time I had a driving instructor. I had this instructor come and I did the basics. Then he took me onto the Long Island Expressway. You know, I had never driven a car before in my life, but he just said, okay, keep going. And before I know it, I'm on the expressway. So it's kind of like a sink or swim thing. And yeah, you might lose some chicks in the process, but the ones that survive, they remember, they've learned a thing or two. I drove by there an hour or so afterwards, didn't see any signs of carnage, so I think everything worked out. And then a day later, also on Route 347, a little further down, what do we see? We see a bunch of turkeys crossing Route 347. I saw them, we were coming up on them, I saw them in the median, and I'm like, oh my God, there's turkeys trying to cross, I mean, even people.
There's definitely two adults
jumping,
sort of coming out from under one of the center medians, so they had already crossed one side of it in the median.
When you cross a divided highway and you're a turkey, you get help, so there was a second adult helping out with this.
And it was about three sort of younger, not very young, like chicks.
They
were
kind of in the middle. They were sort of between the little tiny chicks and the teenage ones.
We saw. Starting to get adult feathers and all that. Like, but
yeah.
They were in close pursuit of one of the adults. And the thing they did is sort of stop at the median.
Uh-huh.
And the adults sort of, one of the other ones.
Looked both ways.
Sort of flapped their wings and made a little bit of a fuss. Mm-hmm. And I think that was like the signal that. And at that point, the cars had sort of yielded, and there was
on a highway
an opportunity. Yeah, two lanes of one direction of that 4-lane highway, and as soon as they started going, all four or all five birds just hightailed it across and got to the other shoulder in no time, like record time.
Yeah.
It was just I'd never seen birds sprint like that. Just. All the way across, straight across, and they knew as soon as they got that signal.
They knew to hurry their asses up, because this is Route 347, otherwise known as the Wisconsin Highway, otherwise known as Smithtown Bypass. Any road has to have at least three names, and it's dangerous. It's dangerous for humans. It's dangerous for turkeys. It's dangerous for cars, even. So caution is the key here. Those were incidents involving turkeys. And we've seen a lot of wildlife lately in the area. You know, it's, yeah.
Well, if you think about it, it changes some of their patterns. They may be disoriented or dehydrated, and their routines change, and they're looking for a nice cool drink.
Ooh, I'm not dehydrated now. Well, it's good to have beverages. That's always nice on a hot day like this. So heat wave, as if they didn't know, they just extended it till tomorrow. You know, it's like they tell you, yeah, it's going to end tonight, but you know what? One more day. They could have told us this 2 days ago, but I think they fear insurrection. I don't know who to insurrect against when it's weather, but one more day. And it's gonna get a little better, and then it's going to get bad again. That's what I'm told, and that's kind of the theme for the future. All right, you want to just dive right in? We can't talk about turkeys and insects all night long. I'd like to. I really would. But there are all these issues. Well, you know, in one week, we'll be in the middle of the Republican National Convention. Imagine that. Imagine the horror show that's going to be. But the Democrats are what we should be focusing on. It's what everyone's focusing on. And, you know, I have really mixed feelings about this because, you know, people have been complaining that Biden's old for a while now. But they never have an alternative plan. They're good at complaining, but, okay, what's the solution? Don't ask me. It's annoying to me when I see all kinds of Democratic politicians, you know, representatives, senators, whatnot, saying, yeah, you know, it's time that Joe Biden bow out of the race. His performance in the debate shows that he's not totally with it. His mental capabilities are in question. And it's time that we hand things over to a new generation and start afresh. Now, I'm not going to say who should do this. Why? Why do they always do that? Why do they always say, this is the problem, but I'm not going to give you the solution. That is cowardice. They're afraid of taking a stand and getting crap for it. Now, look, this is not the Republican Party. In the Republican Party, if you criticize, well, you know what happens. You disappear. Yeah, you get purged. That is what happens. There are so many examples of that now. Anyone who criticizes Trump is not around anymore. That doesn't happen in the Democratic Party. To a fault, because there's a lot of criticizing back and forth, and it's good. This is healthy. Don't get me wrong. It's healthy to have this self-reflection and debates and all sorts of things like that. I love to argue. I love to, you know, weigh sides. I love to change my mind or have someone else change their mind, or even, you know, part different with different viewpoints, but still civil. That's what dialogue is all about. But I'm not seeing enough of solutions being presented. You know, I see names being suggested cautiously, but there is one big elephant, pardon the expression, in the room that nobody is really addressing. And that is that we have a vice president who's completely qualified, capable. I believe we just saw a talk show where she was described as the night president. And that makes sense, you know, because there should be a president who's up in the daytime, and there should be a president or somebody acting on his behalf who does things in the overnight period because, you know, it's not overnight everywhere. So, yeah, let's man the ship 24 hours a day. That makes a lot of sense to me. So Kamala Harris is our vice president. And when she talks, when she actually is given a chance to say what's on her mind, it makes a lot of sense. It's expressed cogently, clearly, passionately. It's basically everything that people are asking for. And yet, for some reason, whenever people are talking about it's time for Joe Biden to step down, they're not saying it's time for Harris to step up. For some reason, that is not said. Instead, who will replace Joe Biden? Well, I mean, we have it set up in a particular way so that if the president steps down, the vice president steps up. That's how it works. But do we really believe, and I'm not saying I don't, that this country is so backwards and so racist that they simply cannot vote for a woman of color? Oh, add sexism into there as well, because there's a fair amount of that. The hatred that you see towards women who hold elected office or any position of power, you know, whether it's governor or captain of Star Trek Discovery. You know, a woman is in charge and they will get 10 times the hatred for the same job, for making the same decisions. So I think there's this this fear, this unspoken fear that we need somebody other than Harris. And I'm saying Harris because everyone says Kamala. Again, that's sex. You know, why is that? Hillary, Kamala, we don't use their last names? Why not? Harris, that's her last name, all right? Unless we're going to say Joe, which we do sometimes, but it's usually, you know, mocking.
Endearing.
Endearing, yeah. You know, Joe and Kamala, fine, but it's Biden-Harris. So Harris is the obvious choice here, but is this country ready to make that choice? And I'm talking about Democrats as well as Republicans, because I see a lot of hostility aimed in her direction when she hasn't even done or said all that much. And that's not her fault because she's doing what she's told by the president's office, which could be doing a much better job at damage control than it's doing right now, trying to come up with conflicting stories and discouraging people from asking questions and just making it seem like they're covering something up, which, you know, would be super ironic if there actually wasn't something to cover up. You know, we all know Biden is 81 years old. Yeah, and he looks it. He looks 81 years old. But he also has gotten a tremendous amount of things done, continues to get a tremendous amount of things done, is able to express himself most of the time, And I dare say he expresses himself clearly far more than Donald Trump does. Donald Trump just talks louder and has a lot of people shouting behind him. But don't be fooled by the smoke and mirrors. He makes no sense at all. And there are plenty of signs that, his mind is going or may just have always been gone. Look, one of the things that we brought this up on this show weeks ago, a debate at 8 o'clock at night might have been too late for, Joe Biden. Now you say, oh, come on, I do things at 8 o'clock, I do things at 10 o'clock. Are we going to coddle this guy and not do anything at night? Well, okay, you know, try being the president for a minute. All right, it involves being up pretty much all the time. And I doubt he woke up at the same time that you did. He probably was up before the sun was up. And, you know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I've got this totally figured out wrongly. But I just would imagine he had a full day already. Now, it's stupid for the White House to say he was jet lagged when he was, you know, back in the States for 2 weeks. Yeah, that's dumb. That's not him saying that. That's them saying that. But to say that it's unreasonable to think that someone 81 years old might be a bit tired at 8 o'clock if they've been up since the crack of dawn and not just hanging out, sipping lemonade, but doing things, important things, talking to people, moving around. Maybe there's something to that. You know, we could at least try it. You know, I'll bet Trump woke his ass up at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. You know? So we're not exactly being fair here. Now, you know, for me, jury is out as to whether or not Biden should step down and be replaced by somebody else. But the jury is in on the issue of this should have been talked about years ago. Not now with months left. I know other countries can handle an election in a month or, you know, 6 weeks. We've seen that in England, France. And by the way, hats off to you guys. Oh, my God, what the French left did. Everybody thought Le Pen's party was going to win. Everyone thought it was going to be, you know, the far right taking over. But what did the left do? They had a coalition of all these disparate parts of leftist politics, parts that disagree with each other passionately. But they united to keep the fascist out of power, and it worked. It worked so beautifully. There were 2 days of elections. The first day was very ominous a week or two ago because the far right made big gains. Everybody knew the stakes for the second day. And it worked. And it's such a model of what we have to do in this country to keep fascism from taking its hold. There is no place on earth that is safe from this. And many places have already fallen to it. But, you know, fascism never lasts forever. It always gets overthrown at some point. But I really don't want to have to go through that. I really don't want. There's enough going on. And the landslide victory of Labour in the UK, wow. Who saw that coming? Well, actually, we all saw that coming. We all knew that was going to happen. But still, it was more than we expected. And conservatives are out, and they are really out. I mean, numbers, I think it was at least double, a 2-to-1 majority. That's a mandate right there. People are fed up. And you could say, you know, people are fed up with right-wing politics, with Brexit, with all sorts of issues that the conservatives brought into the fray. And now there's a chance for the other side to screw things up as well. But hopefully they won't do it as badly. Now, you know, in England, it was easier for Labour because they weren't in power. And that's the challenge that the Democrats face because, at least for the presidency, they are in power. And that's always an uphill battle to win an election when you're the party that is running things. It's always easy to find all sorts of details to complain about and point the finger at the people who are in charge. Even if it's something that either doesn't really exist or is something that was brought about by the previous administration or is due to influences completely beyond their control, doesn't matter. It's still an uphill battle. And that's something already that the Democrats have to worry about. So this conversation that's happening right now, I see it as a tremendous opportunity, because you have the democratic process in full view, you know, being displayed to everyone. This is how democracy works. We argue. We put one side forward. We listen to other sides. We compromise. And eventually we do the right thing. And again, Republicans, our way or the highway. It's very simple. Try it. Try it for a day. Try being, you know, simplistic in what you believe in. Try not considering the other side. Try just saying, I want mine. I don't care about you. I want all of it, or at least most of it. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what anybody else thinks. I just want what I want. Surprisingly easy to live like that. But when you think about others who are not you, when you think about others in different positions, well, a lot of times you might get it wrong. You might not know how other people feel or what they actually want. But at least you're trying. And it's harder. It really is harder to win people over to that if they're not already compassionate and caring about others.
Yeah, kindness is not a given. It's like not a foregone conclusion that you're available for that. And in fact, it's quite ordinary. Like, there's many people out there that just sort of are crass and feel centered in their ego and in their worldview,
mm-hmm.
and can't sort of translocate their thought, like put themselves elsewhere in terms of the greater good or the kind of society we have.
Yeah. Put yourself in someone else's shoes. Say that to a Republican. Say that to a Trump Republican. And what kind of response will you get? I'm not putting on someone else's shoes. They won't even know what the expression means. Or they'll say their feet are too small or something. I don't know. But they will reject the very notion of doing something like that.
Certainly, yeah. And so, like, it's not a sort of a comparison, really. It's just a different way, a different idea and a way of going about things. Sort of deliberative and cooperative. And when you're sort of crusading and just saying, like, you know, I have the answer, you'll definitely get, you know, some version of your way, but you won't really have the coalition that you need to survive what other factors exist in time.
Mm-hmm. No, totally true. Well, a lot of pundits talking about what's going on with the Democrats, what's going on with the election. Remember, it's July. Election is in November. Imagine if the ticket is completely redrawn and we have a new, hopefully exciting platform and new candidates. That will kind of rewrite the way we do things. Maybe election campaigns won't take years. Maybe they'll just take months. Imagine if the Democrats are successful and they nominate somebody in August when their convention is, and that person goes the distance and wins. August, September, October, 3 months. Imagine a winning campaign only needing 3 months. Of course, you know, you're not always going to have something like Donald Trump on the other side, but still, it would be unprecedented. So again, you know, I see this as an opportunity. It could be something truly exciting and, dare I say, revolutionary.
In theory, yeah, it could work that way, and we could be functioning at a higher frequency in the public sphere. But that this is also sort of, this may not be the moment to test that.
Yeah.
Or what people really want. Again, I think the talk of what the current administration is actually selling us on accomplishments as well as a future, and the question to ask, I think, Harris, as you put it, yes.
Did you have to struggle to say that?
No, I wanted to make sure I emphasized it. Is she confident?
She's confident.
In the current president, and also what plan is in place. Mm-hmm. God forbid something. Because if she's thinking about that and has confidence in going forward as we are, I think that's something that's, again, it's nowhere. It hasn't been spoken to. Because there's so many other issues and things she's addressing and responsible for as well. But it's the kind of thing that isn't being really asked. We're all freak, you know, we might all freak out about it, or the left could go crazy and like call all this stuff into question. But isn't that exactly what you're saying? Like, that's where we should look to get an explanation. Uh-huh. You know, can we have confidence that were she to assume that position, or if he didn't want the job,
mm-hmm.
but he does, you know,
right,
quite emphatically, but if he didn't, could she put together something that the Democrats would pose at a convention?
Well, I mean,
or something, you know, because that is, it's sort of like, oh, they're just, it's like the administration against the party,
right,
which is its own sort of disunity. I don't think that's the way we should be talking, in this like confrontational way, like through the White House press office. Like, give me that. That isn't, no, that's not how you should be communicating with your party.
No, agreed. And well, Biden's got, I think, a press conference coming up on Thursday. So we have that to look forward to, and we'll see, how he does there, and how, I think he is more open about these things than his people are, which I guess is, there's good and bad in that. But how he expresses himself obviously will be quite important. If Harris is the one leading the ticket, it'll be definitely an interesting campaign. Harris against Trump. Think about that. Think about that debate.
Yeah, and either way, whomever's at the helm, but especially in the case of something changing, you know, what are the priorities,
mm-hmm.
going forward? What will the priorities be?
Right.
What are you telling the populace to unify over?
Well, I think, you know, mostly unify over what will happen if this party does not win. Based on the promises made by the other party. And those promises have been... What's that website of 2025 that everybody's talking about?
Oh, Project 2025.
Project 2025 dot something. And they're planning in the first 180 days of a new Trump administration to do all kinds of horrible things, get rid of the Department of Education and cut back on all kinds of programs, or eliminate all kinds of programs, and just attack minorities of one sort or another. It's truly disgusting. It truly is. I should volunteer to join them and have them implode, please. Because we have to do things like this. We really do.
Well, and the fights in that sphere, I don't think actually represent how people interact at the local level. I really don't want to see that, like, national politics become a wedge on every corner in every community.
I kind of do.
You do. Well, I'm ready. I mean, I think people are ready for it, but I don't think that... I think people are really over the polarity, and the stakes are such that it's worth looking past some of, like you said, building coalitions as is exampled elsewhere.
Right. But this is how I think it through. We have a fundamental difference in this country. We have all kinds of potential crises looming. All right. And the things that Donald Trump says and does are abhorrent to so many people. And the cowardice that is shown by the people in his party to not criticize him in any way, no matter what he does. And there is so much that you can criticize and condemn. Look at the Democrats. Look at how quickly they have jumped on this. Some of it is self-serving, some of it is panic, but some of it is actually honesty and wanting to do the right thing and talking openly about it. That is a healthy democracy. Now, you look at all the candidates running for various offices, House of Representatives and local offices and things like that. They should be asked, Do you condemn this? Do you condemn this overt racism or, you know, praising Proud Boys or January 6th, all kinds of things like that? Well, LaLota is a great example of this, our representative here in Suffolk County. He should be asked this. And if he refuses to condemn Trump on anything, he is Trump, as far as I am concerned, a local version of Trump. And John Avalon needs to jump on that and make it a referendum on Trump in this race. And every race should do the same thing. That is how you win. That is how you get people who would not ordinarily show up in the polls or, you know, at the polls to go there with passion and say, okay, my vote might not count for the presidential election because it's all or nothing in every state or whatever. But here, it very well could count. It very well could make a difference. You get people fired about that, and you might actually see change.
Yeah, I think that definitely goes for the proxies and people running on this and enablers that are running on this kind of thing should get their due. This is the time to get that critique, and if they've been a part of it, they're absolutely to face that kind of rebuttal from their constituents and others in the whatever venue to hold them to task.
Go on.
All right. That sounds good. Can you get?
No, this is mine, Kyle. It's mine. Get your own.
So, it's important to care.
It's important to care. And, you know, I'm all hot and sweaty now and, pacing around the room, but it feels good to bring these issues up and
talk about it. I think people are getting their critiques down.
Mm-hmm.
And I do hear, like, when I listen to some of the programs like Phone In stuff, and when I hear people comment from the public, they are very clear-eyed. The people that really understand what the comparison is and the track records holding them side by side, when you really, really have it down in your head, I that's the kind of commentary I am hearing.
Yeah,
I'm not hearing befuddlement or people on the fence as much, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I don't know how you can be undecided at this point, but
and the indefensibility of what they're critiquing is even harder to hear because it's so kind of out there.
Well, we'd like to hear what you have to say and think. You can write to us, otw@2600.com. That's otw@2600.com. We're off the wall. We're on every Tuesday night from 6 to 7 here on WUSB, talking about all kinds of things, whether it's heat or turkeys or politicians. Although we can merge the last two, I think. Here's a part of an article from Politico. The Democratic Party's panic over the president's electability has spiraled behind the scenes and is likely to spill more into public view in the coming days. And that's the catastrophized way of looking at it, where this is a bad thing, spilling out into public view. It should be in public view. It should always be in public view. President Joe Biden's outreach efforts to congressional Democrats haven't quelled the party-wide panic over his future on the ticket, and that fight is about to get uglier. All these grim foreboding here. The party dismay over Biden's electability has not abated. Only 6 Democrats are publicly calling for the president to end his campaign, but dozens more lawmakers, even some who say they're with Biden, are harboring serious doubts about their nominee in private. That's according to interviews with more than 30 lawmakers and senior aides. There's widespread anxiety over which route would be worse, sticking with Biden or trying to toss him out. Well, you know, if you have something on your mind, you should speak up. You know, not just say one thing in public, another thing in private. Frankly, said Representative Joe Morrell, Democrat of New York, I think he has to do more than just double down. I think the American public is very concerned about his ability to continue to serve as a commander-in-chief. He's going to have to do more to persuade them than simply writing a letter. Okay, so tell us what he should do. You know, it's a vague statement to say, yeah, he should do more. He should convince me. Well, what will it take to convince you? Look, he did an interview on Friday. There were good moments. There were bad moments. And I challenge anyone to do an interview with George Stephanopoulos and have it be perfect. But he was pretty adamant and obstinate, some might say, about staying on the ticket. But, you know, ask Trump the same questions, and any politician pretty much will be obstinate about remaining on the ticket. It's a sign of weakness to say, yeah, you know what, I might quit. You know, or if one more person tells me to quit, I'll quit. Yeah, that would not fly either. And I got to say, that interview, it kind of annoyed me. I was worried about the interviewer's mental state because he kept asking the same question, would not stop, would not take the answer, just kept coming back and asking it again. Do you remember? Biden answered this question a minute ago, and here you are again. Can you move on to something else? Maybe talk about policy. Maybe talk about something where he actually is engaged and can say something that you might appreciate as being with it, you know, clued in, all that kind of nice stuff. This article from CNN says Democrats see today as make or break day for Biden's political future. Okay, so he's either made or broken right now, right? Or is it the end of the day? I don't know. He's supposed to have meetings in the morning with House Democrats. Okay. Numerous Democrats inside Biden's administration and others close to the White House and campaign have told CNN that the conclusions drawn within a morning House Democratic caucus meeting, followed by a Senate Democrats gathering in the afternoon, will likely seal the president's fate. Okay. Maybe this show is outdated. Maybe he's already gone. I've been staying away from the news because I don't want to find out the score of the France-Spain Euro semifinal game. I'm sorry, that might be silly to some, but it's a big deal. If I look at the news, they'll tell me the score, and I got to figure out a better way to do that.
Well, I hope that all of this is worthwhile because I'm kind of frustrated personally, and I don't really think there's time after this to really be thrilled about the future. The acceptability, the willingness to accommodate the current president is there, but there's a really high cost to it. For me, for a lot of people who've been involved and contributing and participating for a really, really long time and have their own take on how things have gone for them. And I think that's being set aside for a lot of this tolerance. And I just hope it's worthwhile.
That's going to have to be the last word because we are out of time. Boy, the hour goes fast, but I guess we're in a heat coma, so that sort of adds to it. Going to go out with a summer song. You know, I've been doing this fun thing where I go through the Billboard Top 100 of every year, and I'm up to 1964, and I found this group called Chad and Jeremy. They're a British musical duo. I never heard of them before. Chad Stewart, Jeremy Clyde, and they had a hit. They had a hit, and it's all about summer, and I hope people enjoy it, and we will see you next week when hopefully it's autumn. Good night, everyone. And try to stay sane and cool.
Trees swaying in the summer breeze, showing off their silver leaves as we walked by. Soft kisses on a summer's day, laughing all our cares away, just you and sweet, sleepy warmth of summer nights, gazing at the distant lights in the starry sky. They say that all good things must end someday. Autumn leaves must fall. But don't you know that it hurts me so to say goodbye to you? Wish you didn't have to go. My window pane, I'll think of summer days again and dream of you. They say that all good things must end someday. Autumn leaves must fall. You know that it hurts me so to say goodbye to you. Wish you didn't have to go. No, 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 no. And when the rain beats against my window pane, I'll think of summer days again.